mystery and horror. The air itself is filled with monsters.
Children of the night, what music they make.
He's alive! He's alive!
Well, hello, all you monster fiends, and thank you for joining us for another deep dive, factoid-filled episode exploring Hollywood's most famous monsters. I am your mistress of ceremonies, and I am joined, as always, by Dan from Bleed and Marvelous. Say hello, Dan.
Hiya.
Hiya.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Bonjour. Munch too.
Munch too. Oh, thank you for joining us for another episode of Monsters Up North. Today we're going to prom.
No thanks.
Going to prom. Do you know how many times I almost typed in porn night when trying to research this?
Freudian slip. There we go.
Massively. So before I get the disclaimer out, I do want to do a personal disclaimer and apology for last week's episode of me getting Star Wars facts wrong. You most certainly told me in the chat how much I was wrong. I even got a personal message to tell me how much I was wrong. So my apologies. I'm going to now stick to what I know. So in saying that, everything we discussed in today's episode is our opinions and our opinions alone. If you'd like to discuss anything from today's episode, please come and join us on our Facebook pages, the Discord, or the comment section where we can have an open discussion. But what we won't have is anyone coming for us and telling us our opinions are wrong. We can all agree to disagree in fandom. So let's keep it fun, keep it kind, and keep the toxic behavior out of nerdism.
Right off. And don't be a dick.
There you go. Short and sweet. Short and sweet. So, prom night. The 1980 and 2008 slasher movie directed by Paul Lynch originally and then Nelson McCormick, starring Jamie Lee Curtis and Leslie Nielsen, shocked me, then Brittany Murphy and Idris Elba. This is brilliant. These are the girls of Hamilton High. Tonight will be more beautiful than ever before in their lives because tonight is prom night and someone has come to the prom alone just to watch them dance, to see them fall in love, to see them die. Monsters of North brings you prom night.
Good Lord.
That is an actual tagline. I have told you this before in my intros. I include taglines. That was an actual tagline from the original prom night.
I died of boredom during that tagline. That's how long that tagline is.
It was so long.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, it was. The first one was something. The second one was something. And we're here.
We're here to discuss it all. Just to make a point, though, which I didn't know until I started doing the research on this, same movie title name, two completely separate premises. So 2008 technically isn't a remake.
It's what I think they classified it as a reboot. So it's the principal key of the idea is that it's based at prom. And people die, and that's about all they kept. So, yes. Right.
Okay. We'll start as we always normally do with the original and then move into what is now the reboot. I watched the original a few years ago, and it wasn't until on rewatch I went, "Phew, I don't think you were watching that at all."
There's stuff that will stay with you after you watch.
Yeah, some questionable stuff as well. Yes. Like the opening scene for that. This whole thing was totally blown out of proportion, by the way.
Oh, 100%. This was a fever dream in a fever dream in Inception, kind of like an early Inception in fever dream, bloody prom night murder serial killer nonsense. Yeah.
It totally blown out of proportion. Because the opening of the film starts with kids playing in what looked like my old primary school. Tell me that does not look like a primary school you've seen, but they got all Victorian. I'm telling you
now, that place looked like one of those abandoned places that Ghost Adventures go and like walk around. Yes. And they know what they're talking about at.
You know, Zach Bagans walking around.
There's things you, certain things you don't understand. I was waiting for something to come out of the back, you know.
Glass of wear and yeah, that school looked like my primary school. It even had the date on the front of it, which I always remember mine did, of when it was obviously built.
Yeah.
And it said 1913 on it, and I was like, fucking hell, it does look like my school. And they're playing a game called Murderer, as you do with kids. And it's hide and seek, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And while they're playing, there's four kids playing, and while they're playing, another three kids come up. Continuity error or fucking mistake, I don't know. Okay? And I'll get into that in a minute. Three kids walk up. Two are wearing identical clothes.
Mm-hmm.
One is not.
Yes.
What the one who isn't says, oh, I've left my book. I got to go back and get my book. And the two other kids, one's boy, one's girl. The girl mm-hmm. is clearly feeling a little bit left out and is like, right, I'm going to
play with my mates.
I'm going to go and try and play. Well, it ends up going tits up because they're getting too far into this game and they're pretty much screaming in our face at one point to where she falls out of a window and dies.
No, no. No, let's just go to this death here, right?
Come on, then.
They push her towards the window. She is perfectly fine. She even crouches on the windsill. There's no physical push or anything like that. She's literally perched on the windsill. And then she, like, spread eagles herself out the window like she's been thrown with the force of 1,000 darts. It's like, how did we get here? How? Okay.
How?
It wasn't just falling either. It wasn't her just like hitting the window and putting a weight on it and falling out. It was a proper projectile, like bang. I was like, well, that's a bit excessive.
It was. It was dramatic as fuck. Because when she hits it, she's totally like, she has this like beautiful pause of like, I've just fallen out of a window. And then when you go to the kids looking out the window and then go back to her, she's covered in blood.
Yeah.
Wasn't there before.
No.
Yeah, it was a bit dramatic, wasn't it?
It was very off the time of overacting. Yeah, there was just something that was just like excessive about the whole thing. And the way that they were all standing around and like everybody was like, oh, we need to call the police. And they all just listened to that one kid that goes, no, we shall never talk of this again. And you're like,
I'll be like, fuck
you,
exactly.
Just, you know, fuck even you. As a kid, like, how old are they supposed to be? Like 10, 11 here, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, the young, very young. But according to the plot, which I had to go back and look at, someone was hiding in the shadows and could see what was going on. But this is where it gets totally blown out of proportion, by the way. So this girl gets flung out of a window, or she's out the window, she's dead. Everyone automatically assumes she's been fucking brutally murdered, like instantly. And the blaming a known pedalo for doing it. And,
yep.
And I'm like, how did you put two together?
Well, they got six, so they didn't do very well, did they? You know.
How are you guys counting? And why? Why is Leslie Nielsen at the crime scene when he's a teacher?
The headmaster of the school.
Yeah, but why is he there?
Honestly, when I saw him at the crime scene, I was like, oh, right, we're Naked Gunning it now, are we? Is this where we're going to go? He's going to start like...
Frank Drebin it already up the place.
Is this where we're going with this one? I have to say, the only thing I've ever liked Leslie Nielsen playing straight in is Creepshow.
Mm.
I did not like him in this. And it's not because I'm used to seeing him funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing like that. This part, he just didn't get any screen time, really.
Could have been anyone. Could have literally been anyone.
And the type of screen time he did get, I don't think they wrote they didn't write him very well. It was such a peculiar thing. They were trying to show so much in the family dynamic throughout the film, but it was forced It wasn't, it didn't feel very natural, like in the sense of the mum grieves, the dad grieves, the mum's always like, because her daughter got killed. It was very just badly written.
And also really shit detective work. Like, you could clearly see from where she was lying to the smashed window above her. Oh, hang on. Maybe she fell out the window. No, she was brutally fucking murdered. No wonder the mum's a basket case. No wonder. If that's her, if that's when she thinks her daughter died, my goodness. But this is where I can't get over. We flash forward into the now, or what the now is, and we get Jamie Lee Curtis and we get her brother. What was her brother called? Was it Alex? Yeah. We got her brother Alex and we get her dad, Leslie Nielsen. Now, that older girl is clearly Jamie Lee Curtis.
Correct.
So why are they acting like them two are the fraternal twins?
I do not understand what the intent was with this whole family dynamic here. Also, may I add, 6 years, it says, goes by from...
Fuck off. Jamie didn't get them in 6 years.
To when these lot are 25 pretending they're 17, 18.
Don't.
And it's like, I did check on their ages. The youngest one was Jamie Lee at 21. Everybody else was 25. So it's like, I was looking at it going... 6 years, my fucking ass. What is going on here? Mm-mm, there is no way in any capacity. But from what I could gather, the two stripy tops, which was Robin, which was the girl that died, Alex, they were twins.
Uh-huh.
And then Kim, which was
older one,
Jamie, were all related. The bit that I get confused at is this would have been Robin's prom, yet Kim's at the prom, and she would have already had hers if she was older. So is she the same age?
But this is why you got confused and thinking that them two were the twins.
Yeah, but they weren't.
But they weren't. It was, and I was like, "Are you fuck off? You've right for starters, you've made this way more complicated than what it needs to be. Not only with her death, but with the whole family dynamic as well." There is some bits of this film I do like, by the way. So I'm not gonna. Yeah, there's some. I'll say it now. The murder scenes shot. Really, I really like the way they're shot. It's very much of the time. And I actually quite like it. I think the aesthetics were great.
Mm.
Because again, it's of the time. I can't say that I hated this film. I did not by any stretch, but there's a lot that you can pick at. Oh. As in, really, it's either poor writing or over eagerness. And that was one of the things I looked into, because there's not a great deal of facts around this movie, but the director, who was Paul Lynch, he was really gunning for a, I'm going to take on Halloween.
Yeah.
I've got Jamie Lee. I'm going to outdo Halloween. And what he put to the studio, they were like, no, that's too much. And this is what we got. So there's a lot of it's over eagerness.
Not only take on Halloween, which they didn't manage to do anyway, because the filming schedule, they filmed it in 24 days, this movie, and they filmed it up in Canada, in Ontario, which is where it's either Vancouver or Ontario now. Everything's filmed
cheap state.
Not to say Canada is cheap, but it's obviously
but
film there.
filming is, that is a known fact within film. It is cheaper to film. It is still today. Did you film in Canada?
They didn't manage to finish filming until September of 79, which then they couldn't make the deadline of taking on Halloween anyway, had they managed to, because they'd only have September to the end of October, obviously, to get the movie out and done and edited and all that sort of thing. So they decided to take on Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th came out on May the 9th, 1980. It came out 6 days before I was born, Friday the 13th. And they came out with this on the, it was some point in July in 1980.
It was a summer release, yeah.
Yeah, and it was riding off the back of the high of the slasher that Friday the 13th did. And with Friday being a relatively low budget movie, the only way that they could get like notoriety for it was, we've talked about this, but was like the TV adverts and the paper yeah. campaign where they didn't put anything about the film whatsoever. But they called it, the Prom Night falls under the same header as Friday the 13th. It's a morality slasher.
Yeah.
So it is that you get caught doing naughty things, you're going to die. You're going to die.
It's a life lesson the 80s tried to flush down like quite a few times.
Yeah.
If you do naughty things, you consequences.
Yes.
Actions have consequences. There is some great scenes in this, and as we go through, I will get to them. Where was that? Oh yeah, so we're going to meet all the people who are friends with Jamie Lee,
yeah.
and find out that we're actually involved in the incident mm-hmm. of the girl falling out the window. One in particular who I fucking loved during this, by the way, Wendy. Thought she was great. Actually liked the sass of that girl.
Is Wendy the one that was going out with the guy in the van?
Oh.
The random stranger that picked up on the side of the road and suddenly they were besties.
Yeah. Oh, no. No, that's not. But
is Wendy one of the lips?
Wendy's the one. She's the bitch.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
So, you know,
the names did not stick with me in this film. They did not stick.
So Wendy is, if I've got this right, Edie Benton.
Right. Yeah. She's the one that was dating Stelio Contos. Yeah.
Stereos.
You can see what I mean now. Honestly.
Oh, God. I've been trying to think of a name to come up for him, and that is
Stelios Kontos. I swear to God, the first second I saw that guy, the song came into my brain. And for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, it is from American Dad, and it is Stan's bully, Stelios Kontos. So Roger goes and gets his bully to try and confront him so that Stan will feel better. But Stelios has his own theme tune. So every time he appeared, it'd be Stelios, Stelios Kontos. So now when you see this guy, he looks exactly like the cartoon Stelios Kontos. So.
Oh, he's a marvel. He really is. So I had to just Google her name there because she is credited as Edie Benton.
She's but something else, yeah.
For us mere mortals, she is Anne-Marie Martin. Now, this woman is the reason you guys have fucking Twister. She co-wrote Twister. She was married to Jurassic Park man himself, Michael Crichton. You can't say his surname properly.
Crichton.
She is behind so many of your beloved films because she became a writer, but Twister was the one that really stuck out in my mind. And it threw us there when I saw her name in my notes, and I was like, I've been reading about her all day. I'm sure that's not what I saw earlier. That's why I had to Google it. But yeah, she is the reason. Mm-hmm. She is a core writer of Twister.
And she was the girl that told everybody, we don't call the police.
Yeah, because she's a bitch. She's also, second time she's worked with Jamie Lee. Well, this will be the first time. The second time is Halloween 2.
Yeah. She was in the hospital. She was a nurse, wasn't she?
She was a nurse, yeah. Her face looked so familiar. The minute I clocked her, I was like, oh, but I liked her. I thought she had some sass about her. And also, oh, God, who was it? Lisa. Was it Lisa or Kelly?
Kelly? Kelly the one with the lips that looks like Randy's little sister in Scream?
Oh, that honestly thought it was her or her mom.
Oh, God. I want to say it's...
It's Kelly. Has to be Kelly.
I think Wendy, it's Kelly. Yeah, I think it's Kelly.
Kim, Wendy, and then Casey is Nick. Yeah, it has to be Kelly.
Mm.
Has to be. Yeah, I'm just going to say it is. Yeah, she looked pathetic all the way through it. I don't know what was the one called who did get off with a guy in the van.
The random situation that was.
I thought it was fun, though. Kind of showed us that she's like, she's just free living. I loved her hair. But you do get to meet all the main players in that. when I was researching this, and like I said, there's not a great deal that goes into, like, there wasn't, you know, there's not a lot of, there's not a lot of prosthetics or, you know, practical effects that were needed. So I started having a look, like I said, this is how I got onto Edie Benton, and I looked at someone who's not, who doesn't have a Wikipedia page, and that was Casey Stevens. So Casey Stevens is Nick McBride in this. He is the love interest. He was part of the core four who were there the night that what's her face got flung out the window, or fell out the window, however way you want to look at it. And he, this movie and another, is his only credits. He has no Wikipedia page. And somebody, I went on a Reddit post of a guy who was like, I was watching Friday the 13th. No, I wasn't. I was watching Prom Night. I forgot what movie we were doing there. I was watching Prom Night, and as you do, you get on IMDb and have a look, and nothing came up for Casey. And I was like, oh, that's strange. Like, what happened to him after Prom Night? He contacted his ex-agent to find out what happened. And sadly, Casey died of an AIDS-related illness in the early 90s.
Yeah, pneumonia.
So sad.
Yeah, they don't, I don't know whether the he was apparently about to launch his career. He'd nailed like a massive part as well just before he got sick in a huge movie, but they never released what the movie was, or they never said what part it was, but it was supposed to be like his major breakthrough part, and then he got ill.
So sad.
So yeah, that was pretty sad when I saw that. But he in this movie was the policeman's son as well, wasn't he, Nick? Yeah. Now, this is another thing I never understood. Wendy's stalking Nick continuously. Like, I'm not going to take no for an answer. Shoe on the other foot, love. That's a bit much. She was like trying to kiss, force kissing him, and bloody all sorts. And it was just like,
Sweet
yeah.
cheeks, stop. Just stop.
Just take a sec, love.
Look at Jamie Lee took it in her stride though. Like she didn't give a shit. Like she was like, I know he's my man. How quickly did they say I love you to each other?
Well, they've known each other since they were little, so I suppose it
That's
was one of those things,
true.
but like.
Very quick turnaround. So it's leading up to prom. And a few things go down just before prom that starts to freak people out, like dodgy phone calls.
They were weird.
Were weird. All three of the girls picked the phone up. Nick didn't. Who survived?
It was something along the lines of, I can't even remember what the person at the other end of the phone said, but
Do you
it was
want to go
really,
to a party?
that was it. And I was sitting there going, you just go, all right, mate, see you later. I mean, gone are the times where you get weird phone calls anymore. Like when I was a kid growing up, there was one phone in the house, mobiles weren't a thing. If you got a dirty phone call or a weird phone call, it came to the main house, there was one phone, and anyone was going to pick it up to be the recipient of whatever was on the other end of it, you know. There was no private lines to your bedrooms. And I know in these movies in America, most kids in the 80s had private lines
Oh,
to
so
their
wonderful.
bedrooms. And it was like, I was always jealous of all the kids because they had their own phones. It was like a thing.
I wanted a
Now I can't
burger
wait to get rid
phone.
of that fucking thing.
Yeah, I'm fucking sick of it being next to us, but burger phone. I wanted a burger phone so
Yeah,
badly.
I wanted one of the see-through ones with all the 8 colour cogs in it, like the pink and the blue and the yellow cogs and things like.
Oh, absolutely. I remember we never had a phone growing up. We didn't get one until my sister got sick and we didn't have a phone. My mum had to go and fucking bang on the doors to get a phone. So we got one, we got a landline put in after that. And I have this very vague memory of ringing my grandparents at 3 o'clock in the
Amazing.
morning because I could.
Yeah. What you doing?
Isn't this magic?
I can talk to you through a thing. It's
I wasn't allowed to talk.
amazing.
I always remember that phone as well. It was a peach phone. It was like the ones where it was just a, you literally had to pick it up and the dial pad was here.
Yeah.
I always remember my grandparents' phone as well was the, you had to turn the the numbers round. And if you forgot a number,
you start again. Book it.
Yep. Love them phones. I used to have one in my old flat. I had a leopard print fake one where you just had to press the buttons on it.
Yeah.
But loved it. Don't even have a landline now.
I unplugged mine. I was getting so annoyed with phone calls at 3 a.m. from India for some reason.
Was it not me?
It was Sam going, hello, you've won a holiday. Would you like to claim it right now? No, actually, I wouldn't.
Had you been in an accident?
Yeah. You will be, mate, if you ring me at this time again.
No, I couldn't even tell. We never bothered. When we moved in here, I couldn't. Who has a landline these days? Not me. Where are we? So prom, leading up to prom, had the phone calls, had the incident in the bathroom where the glass gets broken.
Yeah, there's a big bang, and Jamie Lee and one of the other girls, I think it's Kelly, are having a conversation in the bathroom, and they hear this big bang, and they walk around and they see that the mirror's been smashed, but then they go to walk outside. Now, this is the infamous shot which Randy talks about in Scream. It's the first time Jamie Lee shows her boobs. Now, she doesn't show her boobs. She shows her cleavage in a bra. The first time Jamie Lee shows her bra... her boobs is in a movie called Love Letters in 1983, where she goes full everything out down to the waist because she does full-on sex scenes in that film.
Oh, Jamie.
So, yeah. I mean, bear in mind at that point she was 24 when she was doing those. So she was ready, she was comfortable.
Oh, of course she was comfy in that body, man. It was fucking fantastic. The minute I saw her cleavage, I was like, yes, Jamie.
But yeah, there's no full on, like Jamie, I say Jamie because his name's Jamie Kennedy, Randy, alludes mm-hmm. to it being the first time you see her boobs. I wouldn't call that boob seeing, but I suppose in 1980, that was a gratuitous shot unless you're watching soft porn. So,
true. Emmanuel.
Yeah, pretty much. Jogging down the beach naked with her braids.
Oh,
but yeah, that's where we are. So
yeah, so prom's about to happen, and holy shit, that disco scene, holy mother of god.
I'd like to question their dress choices as well. What the fuck was Jamie Lee wearing? Looked like a mum's quilt she had fashioned into a dress.
No, go away, sorry everyone, my cat is deciding he wants to climb over that down that way, down that way. Not on my laptop. That way. I know, you're lovely. We see it before she goes to prom. We do see her mother and the effect that obviously the death of the sister has had on her, because she's not awful to Jamie Lee by any standard. But she's very much not there.
No one's at home.
Yeah. And you can see that in her eyes. Do you know, they could have done a bit more on the mom to like give the gravitas of, you know, why this is. How this has totally affected them.
Yeah.
Because
lots have happened, but they didn't specify.
No. The end might have made a bit more sense.
Yeah.
Or felt a bit differently.
Or cohesive. It would have made the whole thing a bit more cohesive. All you knew at this point was Jamie Lee, her mum came in asking if Jamie had stolen a lipstick out of her handbag, and she said, no, that's not my colour, I didn't want to touch that, what do you reckon, do I look pretty? And her mum just basically went, yeah, whatever, bye.
She does, as she's walking out, she just goes, you look lovely, dear. So it wasn't like she's not being mean, she's just
not there.
She's just not there at all. And like I say, if they elaborated on that a bit more, the ending might have made you feel a lot different than what it did when I watched it. The disco scene. The prom.
I've written that in huge letters like this on my notes. Disco scene.
The prom. Woo! So they did that whole entire scene with genuine disco music that was of the time. And then they realized they don't have the money to cover the rights.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to write in 2 days a whole soundtrack to go over the top of it. So what they are dancing to is not what they are listening to.
But they had to write something that matched the beat, didn't they?
And it doesn't go. doesn't go at all.
Ooh.
They are dancing to a whole different beat of a drum.
It's the whole solo. It's when they break out into the whole thing. I'm like, wow. And they're going, Jamie Lee did it all by herself. She's a trained dancer. I was like, right, just give me a second here. Let me just digest what you just said.
Oh, yeah. It said that Casey Stevens, who played Nick, had so much trouble keeping up with Jamie Lee because she was a professionally trained dancer.
Now, I'm not going to take that away from her. I am not taking that away from Jamie. I'm sure she burst into some sort of interpretive dance or ballet or tap or something. She's fantastic at whatever she's trained in. But this was like a mime. It was like they needed stripy tops, clown paint, and do the box thing. And it was like, there was at one point this whole move where I thought she was going to start like, I know what they were trying to do. It felt like they were trying to rival Saturday Night Fever. The dance floor was pretty much on point for that. And they were going to do like some sort of, you know, big, like dance scene, like John Travolta did in the movie. And do you know what I mean? It felt like that's what they tried to go for. Because I think Saturday Night Fever or Staying Alive, they both came out 78, 79, around there anyway, because it was after Grease. Grease was 77. So those two came after, I think.
You also have the dance scene in Grease as well with friggin' JT. And okay. Yeah, and they, so I kind of see where they were coming from, but it was so random. Like, let's show us what we can do. What am I watching? I actually sat up and went, "What the fuck am I watching?" It. This is part of the film that I just generally can't remember.
This is a fever dream bit because this is the most vlogged, the most reviewed, the most talked about scene in the entire movie. None of the kills. When you're trying to look into this film, all that comes up is disco scene this, disco scene that. And I was just like, really?
Well, let's talk about the kills. Because there's some interest. Do you know what? This is the first time ever that I noticed a killer in a slasher being vulnerable, really, really shit at being able to do anything, taken down so easily that you have to know who that is straight away. Otherwise, you've not been paying attention.
No.
Because the killer is actually has already shown his cards in this movie before we start getting the kills.
Yeah. I mean, the kills are pretty good. The last one.
Yeah, they're all right.
Is probably the best one. Old Stelios Kontos. But we'll get to
him. But he still manages to fuck it up as well.
But yeah, the guy, the killer, basically they make you believe it's the escaped convict that killed Robin 6 years earlier and he's coming to seek his revenge, blah de blah.
Or the guy who works in the school who's
the janitor.
Yeah, who has the glasses on and, you know, he's a little, he could come across as a little bit of an oddball when in actual fact he's probably a lovely guy.
Yeah, the stereotypical, let's make the janitor weird role we're at, you know, in the 80s, which pretty much every movie ever. I think the first one is Kelly, isn't it?
After she denies her horrible boyfriend the forbidden fruit.
Yeah, it was all like, yeah, we're gonna do it tonight. Tonight's the night. Ooh, tonight's the night. And then he's like, you led me on, you tease, and he storms out. And like she's sitting there crying in the changing room. So I was thinking, man, if that's where you want to have your first time in a changing room, one of them uncomfortable bench seats, because they were like slats. You know,
you've not thought this one through.
No.
It's the whole, you'll be back, you bastard. You'll be back.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's all that was missing, wasn't it? The big sort of like,
heard that line, that delivery. But I actually liked how they shot this kill.
It was really well done.
I wasn't mad at it. I thought, oh, they're actually using some technique here. So they did it in kind of like a bit slow-mo-y,
yeah.
But you didn't see anything, but you heard it because they don't show you. I get my neck cut. But you heard it and you don't actually, it's so slow, you can't actually make out her expression on her face properly.
Mm-hmm.
Until she's like lying down on the bench. She did. I actually really, I didn't mind how that kill was shot. That was good. Lisa showed something like, look what we can do with a camera.
It was the colour as well. It was all filmed in like a bluey.
Yeah.
Bluey light, wasn't it? And she had a white dress on, so because she was the virgin. So in theory, she didn't cross that boundary. So in morality movies, she would have survived.
But not this one.
But not this one.
Change the rules on this one. Second one was weird kid in the van who liked to get stoned a lot.
Yeah.
With, I want to say her name. I can't. I generally can't remember what her name is. She's not even on my main list. And I take that directly from Wikipedia. And she's not even there. Kelly. It's Kelly. I'm telling you that. One of them's Kelly, one of them's Lisa. Are you Googling it?
I'm trying. It might be Vicky. Vicky?
Oh, fuck, no, man. That's a new name put in the mix. Who's Lisa? Yeah,
it's Vicky, I think. Because right. When you look at all the others, she's the only one that's not got a picture on IMDb.
Got you. Right. So we're going to call her Vicky.
Yeah.
So she's...
Curly hair lady.
Yeah, she was a bit of fun. She met this random stranger who was just walking past her, and he was invited her to prom. He seemed like a barrel of laughs. To be honest, the pair of them really complimented each other for all that they were very new at like meeting each other and whatever it was they had. They very much did compliment each other, especially when they were out in the van on their own before the kill happened. It didn't seem like a like they had chemistry, is what I'm trying to say.
But ladies and gentlemen, Stranger Danger, which actually worked out. Stranger Danger worked out. Like, don't get in random men's. I'm going to call them grape vans because that's what they're traditionally known as. What he had, it was a grape van. You know, that's the kind of guy that had puppies that he wanted to show you, or a bag of sweets in the back.
However, instead, he had a bed.
He had a bed, which I'm still not sure how I feel about. But yeah, all right. And but yeah, you're right, they did have the chemistry. She was willing, he was willing, grown adults, whatever you want to be.
Exactly.
But this was post-coitus, and we're just sitting there counting down the minutes until it happens at that point. Because these two have a moment, and he goes off to take a leak because the gentlemanly thing to do, and as most men know, it's something that you need to do. And then off they trundle, off they go, off he goes. She's laying in the van. He gets back in, and then I can't remember. Does the killer just open the back doors?
No, the back door's already open.
She was talking to him, wasn't she?
Yeah, so she's a very eager beaver when it comes to the sex department. She talks about it quite frequently, that she's not scared of her sexuality and this, that, and the other. And she says, let's go and do it over on this bay. And then while they are getting frisky, he kind of goes, I think I need another joint. And she's like, I think you do. Let's go back to the van. So they go back to the van and the van door's open. And they're just chilling. Like, to be honest, it seems so fucking relaxed. I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling this. And then all of a sudden, fucking kaboom, she's gone. Through the neck, gone. But this is a trope that you don't very rarely see. He could have gotten out of this quite easy.
Yeah.
Quite easy. But fuck, he didn't. He fought back. And that guy, the person who the killer is, was shit.
He was awful at this bit.
He was terrible. So inexperienced.
But that's what you could tell. You could tell this wasn't the guy that they'd already set up to be the killer. You know, this wasn't someone who was meticulous. This wasn't someone who'd, even though technically he's supposed to be meticulous and well-planned and all that sort of shit, this guy was not.
No.
I don't think he was fully intent on killing this guy. I've forgotten his bloody name, but the man in van.
What did he call it? Slick.
Slick, that's it.
Slick.
I don't think there was any intention. I think he was just collateral damage. So because he hadn't planned for him,
no,
he didn't know how to handle the.
Oh no, not at all.
The death. So you have moments where they're rolling around. Then you have moments where he's clinging onto the side of the van while Slick is doing donuts, and I'm just like,
you would have fallen up there.
Get on the main road.
Exactly. Just drive. But it was such a good fight, like on Slick's side, but. The killer finally catches up with them and the car, the van sets on fire. Oh, bless you. You sneeze with your eyes open.
That was a present for everyone.
Oh, not for our audio viewers, though. They didn't see it. You're all good.
You're welcome.
A lot of audio. Nobody ever saw that. I just describe it to them. Yeah, Slick's van sets on fire.
Oh.
Even though... didn't seem like he hit anything hard enough to do that.
Yeah, that whole thing was just bizarre. That it was just like, oh.
I always find car explosions bizarre because they're not designed to be able to do that.
I mean, it goes off the cliff, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I saw something, I don't know how true it was. Someone said that one of the stunt coordinators actually stole the van.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I read that.
Could you imagine sitting there watching this movie in the cinema going, I love that van. That van's just like my van. Hang on. Wait a minute. That is my van.
Yeah. Yeah, the stunt coordinator stole the van. Do you know what one of the other facts? This is how bad it was for facts for this movie. One of them was Jamie Lee Curtis did her own stunts. What stunts they were, I don't know. Because...
No.
If it's flinging yourself about, going, don't do that. Get off him. That wheeling she did when her brother got into a fight was, I thought, Jamie Lee.
What, who are you? Compass. Yeah.
I was like, who are you? You don't wheel like that. She went on fucking ridiculous. I'll get into how fucking ridiculous she went on towards the end. then Killer gets himself to prom and meets up with Wendy. Fuck me, did Wendy put up a good fight?
Mm-hmm.
Wendy put up a hell of a fight. I was proud of her. And that dress she was wearing was banging. She looked amazing. But he eventually gets Wendy.
Yeah,
he gets Wendy. And the one person who I wasn't expecting to get the chop got the chop.
Yeah, because he wasn't paying attention. He saw the crown on the head, because what had happened was Stelio Contos and his cronies had gotten rid of Nick, who was supposed to be the prom king, to do the walkout with Jamie Lee. But because Stelio Contos loves Jamie Lee, he wanted to go out there with her. So they basically beat up Nick and pulled him off to one side and stole the crown. And so Stelio Contos was about to walk out with the crown on, and the killer didn't check who it was and just...
It's a good kill. It's a clean cut, brilliantly placed head in the middle of the stage.
Yeah.
Where but he still manages to fuck it up because he hits the lighting. But it's perfect because it distorts everything. So it takes a while for the whole crowd to realize what they're looking at. Yeah. And then they go all carry and start running out the fucking place where and the teacher, there's a teacher standing at the front of it going, "It's okay, everyone. It's okay, it's fine. Just stay where you..." No, there's a head just rolled out onto the stage. I am not staying fucking one more second in this place.
The thing was, because that teacher was supposed to take the lead because Leslie Nielsen had disappeared. So they were trying to guise it that Leslie Nielsen was the killer. Spoiler.
Is that what they were trying to do?
Yeah, saying... the mum. They were going to try and make it the mum. They tried like to frame it.
I thought it was.
Ways. I did at first, and then I realised there was no chest.
They're looking at the eyes, I thought.
And
it was
a male body, but the face looked female through the eyes.
I've got a feeling they've done a few takes and not used one, and you, because that was female eyes.
100%, that was the mum under that balaclava, for sure.
But it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
It was, in fact, spoilers. It was the brother.
the twin brother of Robin, and younger brother of Jamie Lee.
Oh, that's end scene. So Nick and the killer, he's not, how is it? Did he have a glittery balaclava on?
He did. Alex had a very glittery balaclava on. There was some proper like glitter, like wool used on that number.
I'm just coming off the back of doing Legend last week. That's a lot of glitter. And I was like, whoa, well, like, has glitter just taken over my eyes and like, am I seeing things? But no, he had a glittery balaclava.
Mm-hmm.
What got me is the end fight scene between Nick and Alex. That went on longer than it needed to when nothing was happening. They might as well have been going,
It was the rolling around on the floor on the stage for ages. And then it was just like,
Jamie Lee could have quite easily gotten her foot in the middle of them and pushed one away, but she didn't. She stood around like a fanny holding that axe going, I'm going to get one of them. I'm going to, no. And then she bats him. Finally, when he gets pushed off, she fucking kills him.
She kills her own brother. Yeah, coshes him on the bonts and he's gone.
Oh, but he dies in Jamie Lee's arms after he's been, because she sees it in his eyes. She knows who it is before she takes the balaclava off, and he dies in her arms, and there's tears and like proper mascara tears.
Yeah.
And then the film ends.
Yep. That's it. That is where we are.
Yeah. No nothing, no dialogue, just end.
It is a slasher. It is running off the back of, or in the world of slashers at that time when it all peaked. I think had this have been released when slashers were dying off, or before slashers were a thing, it wouldn't have started the genre, you know, and it wouldn't have been remembered as much had it been on the outrun of slashers.
Yeah,
because it was slap bang,
right in the middle,
Friday the 13th. People are riding high on it. And I think that's where I think this gets, I would say, not too much love, because either you love it or you hate it.
Oh, you can't hate it. You cannot hate it.
But I don't.
Even though I've ripped it to pieces.
The same, but I don't think it deserves to be up there with movies like Friday the 13th or Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Jamie Lee is the reason why this film got made anyway, because they have no budget. They had a lot of low budget people because they couldn't afford it. It was a small company at the start that took it on, and they had it was just I thought I'd written it down, but I hadn't. They had the concept there. They didn't know how to get it done, and they knew that they needed someone on board that was going to sell the movie, and so they went for Jamie. They offered
Makes
Jamie
sense.
100k in today's money, which was 30k back in 1980. She got £100,000 for $100,000 for 24 days work at the age of 21.
That's not a bad fucking paycheck. And to be honest, Jamie Lee is not the worst fucking part. There's some bits in it that is very fucking questionable.
Like, yes, especially you want me to dance and cry? I shall dance and cry.
And we'll get off him. Leave him alone.
But they never. Yeah. They never. They never tell you what happened to the weird pedlo murderer person. You know,
where's our dad?
About all that. No, Leslie Nielsen's gone.
It's just ends. It literally ends with Alex dying in her arms with that gulp. And it's one thing I'm actually quite grateful for. He already had closed his eyes, so they didn't do the eye closing scene.
Mm-hmm.
But his mouth stayed closed.
Slack
that's
jaw.
What would happen. Slack jaw. Your mouth would stay open. So I was grateful for that. This movie spawned 3 sequels.
Mm-hmm.
You know the title? It actually came up when I was watching it today. Do you know the title of the second one?
Mary Lou 2 or something, isn't it?
Fuck, prom night. Mary Lou 2.
And it's about a ghost of a This is why I didn't go into 2, 3, and 4, because I just thought I can't.
No, I can't. I can't deal with that. I cannot deal with that.
It's all about Mary Lou and her ghost roaming the halls of the same school that all this happened in, right? The fourth one is about a priest who is a serial killer that is determined to kill all the kids at prom night for being bad, evil, immoral people. And I was like, I'm out. I'm out already. This is, I'm not. Yeah, no, not good.
Sorry, I'm just going to have to go off camera a second because my cat has picked up something he shouldn't have. Nope. Sorry, you'll get to see my lovely shorts. There we go. For audio listeners, you don't get to see my shorts. sorry.
If you would like to see such things.
He shouldn't. No, he's just pulled something down off the table and he shouldn't have. Rock Simpson, who plays a young Nick. The young kid, yeah. He is actually in all four of the From Night movies.
Oof. That's awful.
And one of the lines, it's not who you come with, it's who takes you home, appears in every single From Night movie.
Oh, there's something really grim about
fucking
that. I don't know.
Pretty, yeah. Yeah.
Well, the budget for this one in old money, in 1980 money, was 1.5 million. Today's, that goes into 14.8 million, the budget, right? You tell me what 14.8 has bought you.
Streamers.
Studio time, streamers, and a dance floor and a sparkly...
disco light.
Sparkly balaclava.
Disco ball. Yeah. I can see where the money got spent.
But 5.7 million in the box office. No, it did 14.8 million, sorry, in the box office, which equated to 56.4 million in today's.
Considered a flop?
And they considered it a teaser. Because it was Paramount wanted to distribute it, but Paramount only wanted to distribute it to 300 cinemas. And the people that made the movie they wanted a bigger release than that. They thought Jamie deserved a bigger release. They thought the film was good enough for a bigger release. So they went with a smaller company called Embassy Pictures. They offered to release it in 1,200 theatres, which they did do. Then Paramount went on to release, because they'd already released Friday the 13th at that point. So they were running off the back of that, thinking to themselves, right, we'll do this one. And, you know, but these guys turned it down to get a bigger release of the movie, thinking that that would help it.
It didn't. But
it didn't really. Obviously, Friday the 13th was the winner in that scenario. So,
oh yeah, that was winning all the trophies.
Kill count.
Kill count. I'll count six.
I've got eight for this one.
Oh, go on then.
No, it just said eight because there's a couple of off screen. So technically there were six, but two were off screen.
Oh right, okay. Who was the two off screen?
There was the nurse that was murdered in the hospital from the escaped convict.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was there was Robin, the dead nurse, in the abandoned place, a nurse off screen. Then there was the three girls that died, Stelio Contos, and then Alex.
So. Alex. I'm not counting Alex. That's where I'm going wrong. Yeah. I wasn't counting Alex, and I totally forgot about the nurse. Going into 2008.
Prepare yourselves. Hold on to your butts.
Hold on to your butts, people, because you're going to get a bumpy. What a fucking brilliant concept for a movie.
You can do what the hell you want to do with this concept. It's set up for you. Everything's in place. A murderer at prom.
Brilliant, but a brilliant... So the concept of the movie is that a high school teacher is getting obsessed with one of his students to the point where he has lost his fucking mind. Mm-hmm. And anyone who gets near her, he kills her entire family.
Yeah.
She then gets on with her life, because she has to, even though we'll go into a bit more detail. I'm just trying to give you the concept of it. And he escapes prison later on her prom night and goes to revisit her.
Mm-hmm.
It is such a brilliant, honestly, on paper, it sounds so much better. It says, Donahue enjoys her last year of high school, enters the senior prom, expecting to be the most memorable night of her life, but a sadist from her past haunts her and goes on a lethal rampage. That's the plot line of this movie. Mm-hmm. That is not how it's fucking executed.
No, it's not.
Oh God, what a mark to miss. And then I don't know. And I was thinking about this when I was watching it. Is it because of the time of it? Because this is a lull moment in horror. There's
2008 was not a good time.
no, it's there's such a lull moment. We are just about to hit another peak coming up in a few years' time when the Conjuring movies start. Because that is a game changer for horror. I'll die on a hill on that, that kind of changed the face of horror in a, you know, as we have seen through history. I will put that in there. But this is such a lull period. There's nothing really going on. And they had such an opportunity. They're using such a high profile name because it's not the same movie.
No.
Like we mentioned earlier, it is a reboot at best.
At best.
And the cast that they have in this movie is fucking top tier. Like,
Brittany Snow was coming out of the back of her own TV series that she featured on. Brittany Snow, for those who don't know her, the best thing for modern movies I can say that she's done would be Pitch Perfect, where she plays
one of the
the
greatest movies ever made.
Where she's the ginger girl with the voice box change, where she drops the register. That's Brittany Snow.
If you're part of our age group, and you understood Hairspray, she was in the remake of Hairspray. She was also in X, which I thought she was fucking. I have a lot of time for Brittany Snow, and I thought she was fucking brilliant in X.
To me,
Very
she's a comedy
different.
actress, though. I see her more
Yeah.
comedy than I do horror. Not to say she can't play it straight, but that's how I see her.
Don't know what the
The
fuck she was playing it in this, man.
Then, of course, you've got James Ransom. Jane Ransom, for those of
Lost
you
my fucking mind when I saw his name on there.
that don't know who James Ransom is, if you know the new modern It movie, he played Eddie Spaghetti in the
My
second one.
Eddie.
And he's also been in
Another old
quite a few that we've done. What was it that he was in the sequel Sinister?
Sinister.
In
Yeah,
Sinister and the sequel to
we've believe it
Sinister.
or not, people, we've done an episode on Bagu.
Yes, and it's one of the worst
That
ones we've done. No one liked it. So please go back and give it some love. You don't even have to watch it. Just put it on in the background. Let
Yeah, just put it down and listen to us talk
it
about
run.
Sinister. You got Ming, oh, I'm gonna say her name right, Ming Nanwen. Am I saying that correct? Sorry if I'm not. Who is oh, come on, what's your bit? She's been in bloody all sorts. She's Mulan, for fuck's sake. She's in Agents of Shield. She was fucking brilliant in Agents of Shield.
Don't know her name on you.
Street Fighter. Chun fucking
Chun-Li.
Li.
Yeah.
Exactly. Helen Lutz is in it.
Yeah, from Twilight.
excuse me. Who else? Oh yeah, the main guy himself. Idris fucking Elba.
Now, in itself, his name alone in 2008 should have carried this. Because even in 2008, he was in The Shield, I think, around then. And The Shield was the biggest thing on TV. I've never seen The Shield, but I've been told it was the biggest thing on TV around that time.
Yeah.
Like,
Oh yeah.
you couldn't move for The Shield.
I just shouted that, didn't mean to.
Yes.
He'll always be Charles Minor to me.
But people were shocked when they found out he was actually British. And I'm like, he's ours. You
Why?
can't have him.
You can't have him. He hated the Charles Minor episodes to start with, and it's only just recently that started growing on us. And I'm like, Charles Minor, hardly know her. Sorry, you gotta be an Office fan to get the joke. Yeah, it's just, oh, I was so disappointed. The opening scenes actually, I thought were really well done. Like
Yeah.
that was horror level, like fucking shit your pants moment.
Yeah, and then you realize, oh, hang on a minute, it's a PG-13.
Yeah.
They did a thing. I don't know whose it was, the studio or it was the producers or whatever. They decided in their infinite wisdom to make this movie a PG-13, which as a horror movie is the death knell. It is the nail in the coffin. It is see you later, bye-bye. Because you're not going to appeal to your horror community who are there for the kills. They are there for the gore. They are there for the blood. They're there for the horror plot lines, the suspense, that all of that sort of stuff. That's what horror fans are there for, regardless
Yeah.
of what's their speciality. You put a PG-13 in, and what you get in?
Shit.
I mean, you get a fair bit for you.
There's
You get a fair bit of bang for
a
your buck, but it's not. it could have been so much
more. It could, especially that opening scene. But what I liked is that I didn't see, like, she gets out at the beginning of the movie. Brittany Snow gets out of her car to go back into her house after having a night out, and she alludes to the fact that something's going on that her family are concerned about, hence the reason she's not going to do cheerleading tryouts. When she gets in, it's no, she puts her keys down, she walks to her bedroom, she tries to talk to her dad, the telly's on, but nobody's responded to her. But it's, you know that feeling. You're not really paying attention until she does. I'm sorry, I'm just having to Google the killer himself because I know this guy, not personally.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff. Jonathan Shaish.
Oh, thank you for saying his name. Thank you. I could not say that. If you don't know who he is from a very lovely movie that's, I fucking adore it, That Thing You Do. He is the ex-husband of Christine Applegate, very famously married. He likes to get married.
He does, yeah.
Done it a few times. But yeah, the opening scene was quite brutal because when you see the fact that she's found her father, found her dad, and then she's found her brother, like, shit, the fuck, but it's not over. He's still in the fucking house, and her mother is still a fucking alive, and she is so smart to get under that bed and stay there, and to watch, she watched her mother knew she was there, and lied that she wasn't in the house.
And looked her square in the eyes while she got killed.
I mean, she could have looked away.
I thought it was a bit selfish, but yeah.
Yeah. But that's, it was when she did that silent scream, I was like, oh, bitch. Oh, yes. Because she couldn't, what does she do? She can't allude to the fact that she's there, but she has to, like, something like, fuck, I've just watched my mum being murdered. I love the opening scene. It's just a fucking shame it went tits up from there.
So it flashes forward, I don't know, we'll say 6 years again.
It's three.
Okay, so it flashes forward 3 years. And she's still got the friend that dropped her off from the night out. She's got a couple more friends. She's in therapy. She's talking it through. She's about to move on with her life. You find out she's living with her aunt and uncle, who are living in the same place, not in the same house, but in the same town. Yeah, she hasn't moved out of the town. She's got a boyfriend. She's adjusted. Life is what they hoped would be for a 17-year-old girl, or however old she's supposed to be in this, 25, as all they are. And you see all the friends talking about, like, prom, and you see that there's, like, issues between two of them because one's going to a different uni to the other one, and, oh, are they ever going to see each other again, and blah, blah,
blah. Oh, blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah. No, you're not. You're all going to die alone.
Pretty much.
You see, and it's all very contrived. What dress are you wearing? Oh, I'm going to wear a champagne-coloured dress, and I'm going to wear a dipping, plunging neckline, which I want to get to that one in a minute.
During that scene where they're having that conversation, the original Myers house from Halloween can actually be seen outside the window.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty cool, because, I mean, they were trying to tie it in, and they did, unless you're someone who really pays attention. You're not going to see it.
No. No, fuck no. If I didn't read it, I would never have known it was actually there. She's got a core group of friends, and they're all getting excited for prom. And then she goes to prom. It's so fucking basic. That it's so straightforward. She gets ready for prom. She gets in the car for prom. She's at prom.
Yeah, it's pretty much that. And then the thing that annoys me about this, she stopped taking her medication because she said she wanted to feel, because obviously they got her on antidepressants, and they were obviously going to numb her. And so she said she wanted to feel this, you know, night and enjoy herself. And the aunt gives her a scarf that was her mum's. There's this whole meaningful thing. She gets giddy when he knocks on the door. I know that her boyfriend is George, because he was in, I can't remember the name of the TV series, but it had, give me a second. This is going to annoy me because I'm going to have to bring it up. But I know him as George. He was, I'm trying to think of her freaking name. She was in One Tree Hill.
Yeah.
With, oh God, what's her name?
Wasn't the OC, was it? No.
Oh, it might have been the OC. It's Scott Porter, his name is. He played Bobby, he played her boyfriend.
Scott Porter.
He was in, where is it? He was in Friday Night Lights, but that wasn't what I was alluding to. He was in, he's done loads of stuff. There's a lot of voices in now.
Lucifer?
No.
Well, this is Lucifer's well later. The Good Wife?
He was like a boyfriend to the girl. Oh, there it is. Heart of Dixie.
Heart of Dixie.
And I absolutely went through a phase of having to watch every single episode of that. And I don't know why, but it had, he was George Tucker in that. And that's how I know him.
Right. Yeah.
And it was Rachel Bilson. That was it. Rachel Bilson. OC.
Got it. Oh, yeah, she is from the OC.
Yeah. They all blend into one, those TV series. But yeah, and that's how I know him, George. So when I saw him, I was like, he's way older than her. And when I Googled it, he's actually 7 years older than her in this movie. He's 25, 26 in this film, and she's just turned 18, I think. So it's, I know that's not, you know, anything, but it's, yeah.
For the fact they didn't do a great deal, like,
PG-13, I think.
It was very, very, yeah.
From.
Yeah. But I am not joking when I say that this movie just goes bang, 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 finish.
We are at the prom, which
the
bitches of Eastwick have arranged, which is in a fancy-pantsy hotel, because daddy's got all the money, apparently. And I'm telling you now, we had a school disco in the school hall. We didn't have, like, proms or limos or evening dresses. You went in jeans and a t-shirt and crimped your hair at my school. We had none of this business. We had none of this, none. But yeah, there was all these like limos turn up and they all get the red carpet treatment into it. But what's the deal with that teacher and Lisa?
Yeah, she's very obsessed.
That was very bizarre. I was like, there was no need for that little bit of.
But at the end, she'd already given her a compliment. She didn't need to like pause, wait, and go, oh, but Lisa, you're so pretty. And that dress is so beautiful. And you're going to be prom queen. Did she become prom queen?
No, she didn't. It was. No, she did. Yeah, no, it was her. Yeah, it was her. Sorry, my bad.
Oh.
Yeah, it was one of those things because when you're watching it, you just think to yourself, I don't understand the plot for that. We already know there's an obsessed teacher in the mix. That's the guy that's... Don't need another one. That was just a weird...
It was a choice. I just want to put something out there. The reason I asked if she was prom queen is because I actually fell asleep in the middle of watching this.
Her and her quarterback boyfriend.
And I didn't feel it necessary to go back and watch what I'd missed because I felt like I didn't miss anything.
No, you didn't. I mean, to be honest with you, from there, that you find out that the quarterback has a suite. Now, bear in mind, suites are very freaking expensive. Even for one night.
They come from money.
They have got to have money. I mean, they booked a suite for six people.
Mm-hmm. Which they come from money.
Three rooms at least. None of them have an overnight bag, by the way. They just room that they're going to go back to and do the walk of shame in the morning in their prom dresses and shirts and stuff. But like they keep going up and back to and forwards from this room. The girls are talking about what they want to do after prom and whatever. And it then goes to the prom where they're all chatting and the most neurotic girl who has the fights with her boyfriend all the time disappears conveniently. She's gone upstairs to the room, but this is when you find out that the escaped prisoner that was obsessed with Brittany Snow has just checked in with a stolen credit card and is now staying on the floor three because he overheard them ask for the tickets for floor three. So he now staying three doors down.
Yeah. So just before all this happens, you get to see Idris Elba receiving a telephone call to say that he had escaped, but it was 3 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he's already been out for 3 days. He's he's not stupid. He's clearly, you know, done his homework. Clearly looks like Charles Manson.
With the hair.
He looked like Charlie Manson. They did say that they took a lot of, I hate to say that they used this word, but inspiration on the look, and also the kill technique was Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Mm-hmm. But it makes sense though, doesn't it? Because it does. Killers and all that sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah. But this is where they could have made it so fucking interesting.
It was very one note with all the kills, in my opinion. They were all very similar. They were all very...
It was frenzy attack. It's all he did. He was just a frenzy killer. He killed out of necessity. It wasn't a case of... you were there, you had to go. That's the only reason he killed. And all of his attacks are frenzied. They're all just bang, 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 bang. Mm-hmm. There's no thought into it. You know, it's not... There's no torture in there. It's not... It's just a means to an end. I need to get rid of you people.
Yeah. Got rid of the maid first because she had the master key and he needed to get into her room. So he wanted the master key, so he killed her.
Yeah.
Kills the friend, the girlfriend first. I think she gets a throat cut or stabbed. I can't remember which one, but she wanders in the bathroom and she's sitting in the corner of the bathroom when he's washing the knife off. Like, you see her propped up in the corner, don't you? And the maid...
You're right. So you're sitting in the bathroom. He's on the phone with... I can't remember who's on the phone with. But she's sitting in the bathroom in the corner. Now, I am reading at the moment. I'm back to Dr. Shepherd again. I'm going to finish this fucking book if it kills us. And he's just been talking about a case where a man... He was a MI6 agent who died... through asphyxiation. However, he was found in a suitcase that was padlocked from the outside.
Yes, I've heard that case. Yeah.
So he was the forensic pathologist on that. Mm-hmm. And they concluded in the end that he actually got in there himself and locked it. And apparently you can't not do it. You can actually padlock yourself. It's very difficult to get out. They concluded that that's how he died. And how they determined that was when you've died, obviously rigor mortis plays a huge part, and the weight changes. Your weight actually changes because there's a lot of things going on as your body is shutting down. It doesn't just cease to be. A lot of things are happening, and you actually weigh a lot more. So there was no... one person wouldn't have been able to get after they died into that suitcase to then fasten it up, and there was no bruises or anything like that, and that's how they determined it. So the reason I'm bringing this up for is because he is sitting in a bathroom with this dead body who's been dead for a bit. Rigor mortis will start to be kicking in very shortly, and he does a disappear and act like fucking Houdini with the body. That would have been fucking difficult.
Yeah. She would have been...
I'm sorry to get all literal, but I have literally just been reading that chapter before we came and recorded.
That lad's name was Gareth, wasn't it? That was in the... I'm sure it was like Gareth something that was in the bag.
Yes, it was. Yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And he was an MI5 agent or MI...
Did I say MI6?
It was something like that.
It was secret. It was... Yeah. Because they thought it was... were under the impression it was... payback.
Yeah, they thought it was the Russian mafia at one point. And there was this whole thing about it being possibly a sex kink, and then there was another thing about being something else.
Oh yeah, so, it was they found a lot of designer clothes, women's clothes, women's shoes that were his size. The family trying to save face, trying to pass it off that it was his sister's clothes. You can't
girlfriends,
but the shoes were designed for his feet. Yeah.
There was some sort of thing going on there, and good.
There was,
it made him happy, but
that's what he was saying. Anyway, what Dr. Shepherd was saying is that the likelihood is he's probably done this 100 times before.
Mm-hmm.
It's some form of a thrill to be putting yourself in it, but then being able to get out of the situation. And he said the likelihood is he probably done it 100 times before, but the keys were actually underneath them when they found him. So, yeah. We don't kink shame here.
No, I mean, good luck to him. If it works.
And neither did.
But if you're going to do that sort of thing, please have someone like a spotter or someone that they don't have to take part in it. They can go sit in another room, but you set yourself a limit of a couple of hours if they haven't heard from you within 30 minutes.
Yeah, there has to be some form of safety net. And that's what he was saying. Yeah, that he said,
that's what
he
you need if you're going to do stuff like that. So
he saw a lot of fetish deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And never once judged. That's the best thing about Dr. Shepherd. He doesn't judge anybody whatsoever, regardless of your crime, or whatever. He doesn't judge anyone. And he was just saying, like, it's such a shame that people can't be so more open about it, because maybe if they were, and that stigma's gone, then they may have been able to have some help.
Yeah.
But the reason I brought that up for is because I literally have just finished the chapter on that, and it was interesting that he mentioned the body weight.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking of that scene, and I was like, would have been, even the tiny girl, your weight changes completely.
Yeah, because at this point he's killed the girl, the maid. Then he goes on and kills the boyfriend of the girl that he's just killed. Then he chases down Lisa, who's
right. This is where I've fallen asleep.
Yeah. Now, Idris Elba's running around like a madman trying to find out what the hell's going on. They just sussed that it was a stolen credit card.
Well done, detectives.
He found the guy that was dead in his car and the wallet was missing. So they checked whether someone had booked in under that name. Surprise, they had. And so they're running around, trying to find out what's going on. Lisa, the prom queen, is running around. She manages to escape him, fall down some stairs, survive, run around, but he finally catches up and kills her. I think the quarterback dies as well, but I can't remember. I don't remember seeing his death, but I'm pretty sure he dies. So they're at a point where, no, unless he made it out, he might have actually made it outside, because what happens is Idris or James Ransom pulls the fire thing, so they all get ushered outside. And at this point, she's forgotten her mum's scarf. So, of course, Brittany Snow has to go back and get it. No, but she had to. So off she goes to the room, even though the rooms would be unlocked down, all the doors wouldn't be able to be opened unless you were inside trying to get out. You know what I mean? Full on protocol. So she goes in the room. She goes to pick up the scarf, which conveniently is hanging in a cupboard or in a cupboard for some reason. I'm like, when did you put that in?
What was it with all these cupboards?
And the hangers everywhere.
Yeah.
Look, we're not doing Halloween. This isn't like Kill Michael with a bloody
pointy. There was a lot of shots into a wardrobe.
it was very odd.
It was overused. It was used at least while I was awake 3 times.
I think he comes out of the wardrobe at one point and kills one of them in one of the kills. I can't remember who it was. But then anyway, he uses his master key that he got and he gets into the apartment and he finds Brittany Snow in there while she's in there and she starts freaking out. There's like a little tussle, like he's telling her how much he loves her and all this sort of stuff. And she manages to get out the room and absolutely vomit down the hall. Get out. And she's out and she's screaming, you know, he's in there. Idris Elbus realizes that he's dressed as a security guard as he's walked out. So he's missed him. He's gone into the ether, the murderer peddler. And so they close the thing down. They then go to the aunt and uncle and tell them that she's obviously got to stay here under supervision. There's going to be people outside. The boyfriend's sitting with her in the room. And then they are look watching in the wardrobe. TV. She goes for a wee. Comes back. She starts talking to her boyfriend. And he's had half of his throat slashed, dead on the bed.
This is where I woke up.
Yeah. So
literally she is crouched over him, crying, to where he then comes in. Oh, is this another wardrobe scene? This is where he jumps out the wardrobe, because she goes up to the wardrobe, looks in, and he jumps out of it. They have a bit of a tussle, and Idris Elba comes in, cock swinging, fucking shoots him.
Smashed
dead. Him. Idris Elba gives her a big cuddle, and then what happens? Movie finishes.
Yes, the end. So that was a waste of time, but it didn't do too badly.
No, it didn't. Horror wasn't there anymore.
No. I mean, it had a budget of 20 million in 2008, which equates by today's standards at 29.1 million, right? So that's quite a lot of money for a budget for a film that didn't really have much gore, being a PG-13. And it is one of the only horror movies to have a PG-13 rating. The box office, it took 7.2 million in 2008, but that equates to 83.4 million in today's money. So 80 that took 83.4 million today. That is insane. I don't know what we must have been bored in 2008.
We
We
really
must have
must
been
have.
lapping up whatever we could get, because I don't understand why this film is a throwaway film. Like
Oh,
you
yeah, you
say,
should have thrown it right away.
the concept, the script, the it's all there for them. The cast, everything is right.
Yeah. On paper, perfect.
But what we got, I feel, was just so lackluster.
Meh.
Yeah, it was lackluster. It was like there was something more needed, but we never got to it. We never got to that thing that we needed to get to. I
It
mean,
was there was so it was so like mapped out as in boom scene, boom scene, boom scene. That's it. It was all a series of moments and not a great deal of story there. Like the most interesting part is the beginning bit, but then you are so you flash forward and it's only been 3 years, and in that 3 years she's managed to get her fucking shit together. It'd take me 3 years to fucking get out of bed after that. Like there's she either she's an incredibly strong person, and if that's the case, then fucking show it. Show how fucking strong
Yeah.
she is.
She's
But
DeLulu. She's one of those DeLulu people. She's like, everything's fine.
she really was, and to the but
Yeah.
then she had but then she had a moment of vulnerability in the prom where she was like, I'm scared to go to college. And fucking but she wouldn't say why. Fucking tell them why. Fucking say, I experienced one of the most traumatic things nobody should ever witness. I'm fucking terrified. But no, brushes it under the carpet. And even our boyfriend's like, well, you've got nothing more to be scared of now. Bitch, I've got everything to be fucking scared for.
Yeah,
Like, oh, it was
it's
such a waste. Do you want to know how much more of a waste it was? The fucking director, I'm sorry, I swore so much. The director, I'm just gonna read what my actual fact says. It done extensive research into proms going as far back as where when and where the first prom ever was held in American film history. So he wanted to make it so authentic. That's what you put your time into, making sure a prom looked authentic, as opposed to actually looking at your script and going, oh shit, the dialogue's not really good in this mind. No, but we've got to get that prom right, got to get the scene right, the setting right, the feel right, the aesthetic right, but not even look into the fact that your story is horseshit.
There's no chemistry.
There's
The cast
none,
is
it's
great, but there's
so
no chemistry.
flat.
I feel like the thing was, the guy that originally got the gig to direct it, and his name has completely lost my mind, like left my mind. He was originally a TV writer and a TV director. So his only experience was not movie, it was television.
It's
So
actually him. It's Neil McCorrick.
that's
He's
it.
so Neil McCorrick is the director of Prom Night.
Right.
He has only ever made two movies, Prom Night and The Stepfather, both really shit horror films of 2008 and 2009. However, his television credits, ER, Prison Break, 24, Southland, Nip Tuck, The West Wing, Criminal Minds, Daredevil, Lovecraft Country. And that's what we get for film.
It's like he just was like, I don't really care. They give me this
Oh.
job, I'll do it because I'm getting paid, but
So it's honestly,
yeah.
it's infuriating because, like I say, on paper, this is it sounds brilliant. I was actually well up for watching this. Probably more than the original because I'd seen the. I'm glad I rewatched the original because if I had to go off my memory, we wouldn't have been talking about the same movie.
Like I said before.
Yeah, but it was just such a great idea that was just wah, wah, when it came down to actually having it on screen. I have the body count.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers up there, it's 14.
Same as me, yeah.
Yeah. Dad, brother, mother, maid, Michael, bellhop, Lisa, guy in truck, Nash. He killed Ranskin.
Yeah, he did. He killed him in the car.
Motherfucker. Bobby, cop outside the house.
Yeah.
Killer, him.
Mm-hmm.
And the inmate when he escaped. Makes 14.
Right.
He killed Ran. Fucking dick. Killed my Eddie. I was so excited when I saw his name in this. Really, really, I was like, is he actually going to be in this? Because I remember when Midnight Mass came out,
mm-hmm.
and I was so under the impression that James Ranskin was in that and it wasn't him at all. I was absolutely,
he does absolutely look
convinced that was James Ranskin. And then I was like, fuck you. Where's my Eddie?
Okay.
I really wanted to love it, but I'm sorry, I can't. I feel like you've getting a feel as to why.
It's a 1.5 out of 5 at least, and that's purely based on the cast.
Yeah, like, the cast, just the cast, because nothing else is there, and it's such a shame because in my head, if you've got someone who has serial killer tendencies, because bearing in mind he is just fucking an obsessed person to the point before he kills.
Yeah.
Oh, that is such a journey, and you fucking wasted it.
Oh, you didn't get any backstory. You just got the kills.
Yeah, and you wasted her too. Completely wasted her. There's no survivor there. There's no, you know, do you know what I mean? There's no, like, they're giving you a fucking reason to be like, oh shit, you got out of that alive.
I mean, Scout Taylor Compton was also up for the part, but Britney.
Oh, I feel like she would have done better for herself, like, but she still had to deal with that dialogue.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, she did. So for those of you that don't know who she is, Scout Taylor Compton was Laurie Strode in Rob Zombie's versions of Halloween. And she's been in a lot of Ice Nine Kills videos.
She's a horror queen.
She's considered one of the newer scream queens for sure. Also, Emma Roberts was up for the part. Now, I am very, very glad she is not in this movie. Emma Roberts is an abuser and she doesn't deserve screen time, in my opinion. But people keep giving her money, keep giving her time because she said, I'm sorry. And she is Julia Roberts' niece. So
it's Eric Roberts' daughter.
But she says sorry, so that makes everything disappear. You know, Evan Peters.
I'm sure Evan Peters feels that way as well.
Yeah. But it's proven, it happened, it's not allegedly, the responsibility has been taken and the conversation has been had in the public forum. So it is a real thing. I don't have to say allegedly because it has taken place.
It happened.
Yeah.
It didn't just happen once, it happened twice.
Multiple times, yeah.
Yeah. No. Fuck her.
Yeah.
I hope to God we don't cover much on her. And if we do, I'll not be seeing any of them. Yeah. Prom night, it happened for them. Not for us, but for them. I have no more on prom night. I got really angry in that one. And it wasn't probably anger. It was probably more frustration. I was so frustrated with that last movie.
Yeah.
But next week, we're stepping away from the double feature that we've been doing. Just for a brief pause.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a brief, because I have been loving the double features. It's been great fun.
And God knows there's many, many to come because
so many more
remake films anymore. That seems to be a standard.
This is like, isn't it just like how horror is done? You get one there, you get one here. that one. But next week, in honor of a certain big anniversary, I picked this one. I picked this one.
I did.
We are doing Man Behind the Movie.
Yes.
that's what I said. Man Behind the Movie.
That's what she said.
You did. And we're doing Toby Hooper. I finally said his name right. I've been calling him Torb Hooper for God knows how many long. How many long? How many? Four English failed me there.
to be fair, it is past 11 at night, so we are allowed to get words wrong.
Yeah, and not put them in the right order at all.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been saying his name wrong for so long to where Dan had to get Google to prove that she's right and I'm wrong.
I got it up and got her to pronounce it. She's very posh. Toby Hooper.
So, yes, we're doing Manor House. So be on the lookout for stuff because it is the 50th anniversary of Texas Chainsaw. Don't get us wrong, we're not going to be focusing a great deal on Texas Chainsaw, because if you want to know more about that, you can go and listen to our Leatherface episode that we did many moons ago.
I watched all 11. I suffered for that one.
She did. So
you, I did it more for you.
You just give us Sally Field vibes. Oh no, it's The Omen.
Yeah, it's all for you, Damien.
Oh, I watched that the other day, the first Omen.
No, told you not to do it.
I did it. I had no choice. There's a reason I did it. Can't tell you the reason just yet, but I can tell you after we're finished, but I can't tell anybody else the reason why. You have to find out in July.
Yeah, wash your eyes out with bleach. It's fine.
If I started, you'd get a bigger rant than you've just had. I am such the Omen is one of my, like, it's embedded in my heart. And when you start fucking with the law, like, just infuriates us. So yes, next week, Toby Hooper. If you don't know him, just a brief Texas Chainsaw, Poltergeist, going to be looking into, you know, everything about him. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. So for us, and we are on YouTube every Monday at 8 o'clock. The audio for this episode and every episode that is associated with Nerdy Up North is available on a Tuesday from anywhere you get your podcast from. Please remember to like, share, subscribe. Hit that notification bell so you never miss an episode. All the links for Monsters Up North, Bleeding Marvelous, and Nerdy Up North are where Dan is pointing to right now with her beautiful orange nails.
These are high vis. I can go direct traffic.
That way. Is that it? We covered everything? No Star Wars rants, no getting information wrong. No. Well, there's nothing else left to say. Say goodbye, Dan.
Bye, Dan.
Stay spooky, everyone. Bye.